The following talk was given by Ber Gokhan Bonabakar at Zen Mountain Monastery. Gokhan is a senior monastic and dharma holder in the Mountains and Rivers Order. He serves as director of operations at Zen Mountain Monastery and also helps run the National Buddhist Prison Sangha. This talk, like all of our talks, is given free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. I first wanted to say happy Father's Day to all the fathers here and wherever you are, and to my father. And after the talk, we'll leave the Haka box out if anyone would like to offer incense for their father. This is from a teaching from Bodhidharma called The Two Entrances. Noble ones enter the way by many paths, but essentially there are but two. One is by principle and one is by practice. Those who enter by principle become enlightened to the truth on the basis of the teaching. One must have a profound faith that all living beings, common and sage, possess the same true nature. It is merely because of the unreal covering of adventitious dust that our true nature is not revealed. For those who turn from delusion back to the real, forsake discrimination, and abide in brightness, there is neither self nor other, neither ordinary being nor sage. Without moving, without effort, you abide in complete and unspoken accord. This is entrance by principle. To enter by practice refers to four all-inclusive practices: encountering suffering, adapting to conditions, seeking nothing, and practicing the Dharma. So this is just the first part of this teaching. I'll get to a little bit more of it. Bodhidharma is credited with being the founder of what was Chan in China, became Zen when it came to Japan. And he's kind of a great figure in our tradition. Said to be a monk who came from India, who traveled all the way from India in the 500s to China, in order to bring this special teaching that he said was a direct pointing to the human mind. And so he's this great figure in our tradition, but historically he's a little shadowy. Right, there are scholars who question whether he even existed. But it seems that someone, there was a Bodhidharma around that time. And a number of teachings that are attributed to him, again, some question as to whether those were his teachings. But there seems to be some consensus that this short teaching was his. And over the years, I've spent some time with Bodhidharma's teachings. So this is the beginnings of our tradition. I wanted to know what were those teachings? Where did we begin? What is the sort of at the root? And have had some questions about the translations that were available. And so the last time that I was with I was spending time with these teachings, this teaching in particular, I said, "Oh, I could talk about that," and I said, "But I have questions," and so I decided to look at a number of different translations and to put together my own. And so, my apologies to all of the translators, and gratitude. We are indebted to the translators, to those who have translated the teachings, so that we can study them, hear them, meet them. And so I have, for the most part, used the words of other of translators, and done some picking and choosing. And a couple of months ago, I gave a talk about this first section, entry by principle. And so I want to say just a little bit about this, and then look at the first practice, encountering suffering. So So Bodhidharma says, essentially there are two entrances, two ways to enter the path, to enter the way. There is entry by principle, through faith in the teachings, and there is entry through practice. And you know, we're like the practice school. So it may feel like, well, it would seem like practice is the way. But I don't think that he's holding one up above the other. There are just different ways. This teaching is also sometimes translated as being the outline of practice. He's outlining practice for us, outlining the path. Each of these ways gives us a complete outline of practice. Each of the four practices is all-inclusive. So there are many ways to enter, different ways for different people. We have different tendencies, propensities, histories. Some of us may have more faith than others, and so be able to enter through faith. And so there are different ways to enter, but this is not because the Dharma is different for each of us. We each have to find our own way, but to find our own way in accord with the Dharma. That's why we need the teachings, why we need to study, why we need teachers, so that we can practice, so we can find our way in accord with the Dharma. And I was thinking here, I feel like, it's amazing how we are all different. We are all different. And kind of it's the great good news that we each find our own way and can find our own way. We have a responsibility for our own life, for our own awakening. Nobody's going to come help us, do it for us. Nobody can. That's good news. And sometimes I feel the kind of weight of that. I have to find my own way. Nobody's going to come help me. There is amazing support. I live in the midst of the three treasures. And I am responsible. You are responsible. We have to find our own way. And also that each of these different ways in the Bodhidharma presents, different ways into the way, may be helpful for us at different times. At different times in our practice life. Practice is continuous. May we enter the way continually. And I think we also can hear the question here of what is it to enter the way? How do we enter the way? He's offering us some ways, and we have to find, what does it mean to enter? Because just taking our seat on the cushion, studying the teachings, doesn't mean that we've entered. Practice is not an idea. So Bodhidharma offers us these different ways to enter the path that may be helpful to enter again, to deepen, to clarify. The teachings are always pointing us to our own mind, to our thinking, conceptual, karmic mind, helping us to understand, work with, and pointing us to our awakened mind. And so in encountering the teachings, we have to find our way there, in there. They are presented, in a sense, as ideas, and they are not pointing to ideas. They are pointing to minds, to our experience. Bodhidharma says, those who enter by principle become enlightened to the truth on the basis of the teaching. One must have a profound faith that all living beings, common and sage, possess the same true nature. It is merely because of the unreal covering of adventitious dust that our true nature is not revealed. And so this is kind of the fundamental teaching. All beings, he says, common and sage, us regular people and the enlightened ones, all beings possess the same nature, the same true nature. Sometimes we call it Buddha nature. To say it more simply, you're okay. I'm okay. Each thing that you meet, each creature, each cushion is okay, just as we are. And so entry by principle is through faith in this teaching, before we know this for ourselves. Because we don't always feel okay. What's going on here? What do I do with the situation here? Each of us has the same nature, but we don't know it. Don't act accordingly, live out of that knowing. Because it's covered over, the teachings say, by adventitious dust. Adventitious means coming from the outside. So all of the thoughts, emotions, ideas, opinions, our view, all of our reactivity, our habits, is this adventitious dust, is this dust covering over. And we take these things, this dust, all of these different things that we experience, to be more real than they are. They seem real, these adventitious coverings, and we tend to identify with them, think that's me. But they're impermanent, they are ephemeral, they are passing. But they do seem to cover over our view, our cloud, our true, what is true. And this is all just a way of speaking, right, to try and help us, to try and point. Because it might help us to see for ourselves. It is meant to help us understand our own experience and show us a way in. So this pith instruction, in a sense, very simple. I kind of love this teaching. I've been appreciating it in the past years. I think maybe as I come to actually understand it some myself. But particularly this teaching that all of these things that we experience, all of these different ways that we get stuck, they're just this adventitious dust. They're not as real as we think they are. They're workable. They're workable. And they're not who I am. And so we can have faith in this teaching and practice in accord with this teaching. And so Bodhidharma is giving us practice instructions so that we can realize for ourselves. He says, for those who turn from delusion back to the real, forsake discrimination and abide in brightness, there is neither self nor other, neither ordinary being nor sage. Without moving, without effort, you abide in complete and unspoken accord. This is entrance by principle. I hear these as Bodhidharma's meditation instructions. Having faith in the teachings, we can sit in this way. We can take up these instructions and practice them in our own practice, in our own sitting, in our own zazen. Learn to abide in accord. So that is the first entrance by principle. To enter by practice refers to four all-inclusive practices: encountering suffering, adapting to conditions, seeking nothing, and practicing the Dharma. First, encountering suffering. When a practitioner of the way encounters adversity, they should think to themselves, in countless ages gone by, I've turned from the essential to the trivial and wandered through all manner of existence, often angry without cause and guilty of numberless transgressions. Now, though I do no wrong, I'm punished by my past. Neither gods nor humans can foresee when an evil deed will bear its fruit. I accept this adversity with an open heart and without complaint of injustice. The sutras say, when you meet with adversity, don't be upset, because it makes sense. With such understanding, you are in accord with principle, and by encountering suffering as an opportunity, you enter the way. So practice the practice of encountering suffering. These practices, too, are ways to enter the way. And so again, what is it to enter the way? To enter practice. What is it to practice? It is not an idea. And so how do we encounter suffering? Meaning, how do we meet it when we experience suffering? And so to find what does that mean for you, suffering? Bodhidharma uses the word adversity. Maybe it's discomfort, it's disappointment, it's dissatisfaction. Yesterday in the retreat, we were talking about some of the kleshas and some of the things that we meet that kind of don't fit in the list of kleshas. Depression, anxiety, fear, overwhelm. So again, with the teachings, to find your own way in, to kind of find how your experience, how the teachings are pointing to your experience. When we encounter suffering, do we see it as an opportunity? What does that mean? So first a little bit, so this teaching, as it is presented, is kind of in the embedded in the teachings of karma and of rebirth. And so I just want to say a little bit about that, kind of so that we can enter. So again, Bodhidharma says, when a practitioner of the way encounters adversity, they should think to themselves, in countless ages gone by, I've turned from the essential to the trivial and wandered through all manner of existence, often angry without cause and guilty of numberless transgressions. Now, though I do no wrong, I'm punished by my past. Neither gods nor humans can foresee when an evil deed will bear its fruit. And so in past lives, we've done all manner of things. Right? And so there is this understanding in the Buddhist teachings that we have had past lives. And so this teaching is saying, you know, we can assume, we don't know, we can't see it, but we can assume that in those past lives we caused harm. The teaching of karma, this law of cause and effect, that intentional actions have results, say that intentional actions always have results, an effect, will bear fruit at some time. And so the teachings say that sometimes it's immediate, and sometimes we can see that. Sometimes we joke about like instant karma. Right? Sometimes it takes a little while. Right? And sometimes we can see that. Right? We do something or something's done to us, and we can see how that plays out over time. Maybe we are actually working to resolve it, and that takes time. Maybe we realize that we're working with something, something is arising, we're encountering something in ourselves that is kind of a result of something that happened a while back, and it's like there's been a gap, right? But we can see it happened in our life. And this teaching is saying, teachings say that sometimes it's from way back. Sometimes it takes a long time for the effects to kind of arise, to come in, for the causes and conditions to be ready, to be appropriate for something to come to fruition. As Bodhidharma says, neither gods nor humans can foresee when an evil deed will bear its fruit. And so this teaching is just trying to offer us a way to meet adversity, to meet suffering, right? So even when we see, I've done no wrong, right? I can't see that I've done anything wrong. Why is this happening? Right? But the teaching says, no, but it makes sense. It makes sense. And one way to understand that is to say, oh, this must come from the past. And in that, can say, I accept this. I will not fight with this. I will not complain about it. And so this teaching can be helpful. We don't need to believe in rebirth. I think this is a place where we can sort of like get a little lost, right? And sort of worrying about, debating about, right? It's a place where it's kind of like one of these few places in Buddhism where it is kind of just belief. Or faith, right? We can't see it for ourselves. Karma is difficult to understand. There's this teaching in the sutras where Ananda comes to the Buddha and basically says, "Your Honor, I think I understand. I understand karma, right?" And Ananda was one of his close disciples, right? Foremost disciple. And the Buddha says, "No, don't say that. You don't understand." Right, basically saying we can't, like the Buddha understood, it is said, but like we can't understand, it's so complex, so subtle. But we should study karma, look at cause and effect, see how this plays out in our life. And maybe a simpler way to understand this teaching, it makes sense, is just to understand karma is cause and effect. Everything arises as a result of causes and conditions. So whenever anything happens, it's a result of causes and conditions. It makes sense. And I was reading something recently that I found really helpful that was just pointing to the fact that understanding in that way, it kind of depersonalizes, right? It's just a result of causes and conditions. It may be happening kind of like in me, but it's just causes and conditions. So it may be helpful that how that depersonalizes. It's not me, even though it's arising here. I'm experiencing it. So reading this teaching, I was thinking, you know, in other faiths, sometimes you'll hear people say, yeah, this was meant to be. Right? I accept this. This was meant to be. When some meeting, some misfortune. But I also want to offer a caution here, this teaching about karma. Because karma can be misunderstood and really misused. and actually used to perpetuate, kind of explain away oppression, say that our it can be understood, we could hear this as saying that our misfortune or some injustice that we are experiencing is our fault. And so there's another translation that this first practice is suffering injustice, the practice of suffering injustice. And so to be careful here, because we can misuse and misunderstand that, misuse it in sort of here with ourselves and with others. Here, this is kind of blaming the victim for their own suffering, for what has been done to them. And it's also not asking us to be passive. Right? Practice is not passive. Patience is not passive. Some years ago, there was a, when I used to more regularly work in prisons, there was a guy who had been a member of the Sangha for quite a while and had really turned his life around in prison, and in large part, I think, through practice. And we were meeting one night, and I think that he had just been turned down again for parole. And he asked me, you know, he said, "Gokhan, I've done my time. I have taken responsibility. I have tried to make reparations for those I harmed." He knew that he had harmed others. He took responsibility for that. So he said, "You know, what's happening? They won't let me go. Is this my karma? Is this because of something that I can't see that I've done in a past life?" Was what I heard him asking. And I said, "There is karma. Some of us have heavy karma, difficult karma, from things that we have done and things that have been done to us. And so there's a way in which we have to deal with that." Right? And so I said, "There is karma and there is injustice. There is injustice. And so we have to try to be clear about these teachings. Clear so that we don't use them against ourselves or against others. Try to see the truth and how it's helpful, how it's skillful, how we can use them to unbind." And so I chose not to use this translation, suffering injustice, but also just to see to hear the truth of that, hear how we turn things and kind of put them outside of us and feel when we are suffering and say, "This isn't fair," right? Feel this is being done to me. This is an injustice. When so much of the time it's just not how I want things to be. I think of someone sort of shouting at the heavens saying, why have you done this to me? When we put it outside like that, then we can't do anything with it. There is no opportunity. Ajahn Chah says, "There are two kinds of suffering. One that leads to more suffering, and one that leads to its end." Recently, Shugen Roshi said, "We have to learn to suffer in a clean way." And I asked him about that. What is it to suffer in a clean way? He said, not adding anything to it. Not getting upset about it. Not adding another layer of suffering. So encountering suffering, the practice of encountering suffering. After I gave, I talked about the first part of this, Sean and I were having dinner with some old friends, and I was trying to sort of say a little bit about what I had talked about. And one of our friends, when I said something about this suffering and justice, she was like, "Yep, you have to suffer. You have to suffer." It's like she got it immediately. It's interesting. We don't want to suffer. And so there is in this teaching, we have to actually encounter suffering, make contact. It is like so deep in us to avoid discomfort. And we can do that for our whole lives, or seem to. Avoid and numb and distract and turn away. Not be in contact. Never really touch that truth of our experience. There is something that needs to be attended to. Making contact with suffering can be a way in. Making contact cleanly, feeling pain, disappointment, shame, anxiety, there is an opportunity. So the importance of in Zazen, in a practice, of simply allowing ourselves to feel our feelings. Allow. And maybe particularly the difficult ones, the uncomfortable ones. We don't have to go looking, digging around, but to allow ourselves to feel. We can also understand karma as habit. It is the cycle, or we have these habitual cycles of suffering. When we don't see clearly, when we don't see what's happening. We talked a lot this weekend about grasping and aversion, these basic habitual reactions that we have. So when we make contact, not turning away, there is the potential to study what's actually happening. What's actually happening? How is it that we create? Are we creating? What is it that we're creating? How is it that we create suffering? How is it that we distance ourselves? How is it that we're dissatisfied? What is suffering? It's here that it can be liberated. And so you could say this is why we sit. This is why we learn to settle the mind. Allow the mind to settle so that we can see. Kind of allowing things to slow down so that we can see what's happening. So that we can see our grasping and aversion. And that we can learn to stay with our experience. Not pushing away. Learning to tolerate discomfort. It's okay. It's okay. Learning to stay with our experience, learning not to make it more than it is, not to proliferate. A few weeks ago, I did a retreat with a Chan teacher, Rebecca Lee, at another retreat center. So her teachings have been in me. One of the things that she, her definition of suffering is phenomena plus vexation equals suffering. So things are okay as they are. phenomena. The phenomena that seem to be out there and the phenomena that I meet in here. Each thing is okay. But when you add vexation, you get suffering. And so what is this vexation? Where does it come from? Somehow it's happening here. Which doesn't mean it's my fault. Right? We talked about kleshas yesterday, kleshas, these difficult emotions, binding emotions. They're difficult, but they're not our fault. So when there is vexation, how do we meet that? Someone was saying, quoting Hojin Sensei recently, that sometimes she just says, oh my mind, there it goes again. Upset again, triggered again, freaking out again, oh my mind. It's okay. No need to be to fight with it, to be upset about it. Just my mind doing its thing. Habit. We don't need to add another layer of suffering or even make it suffering. What makes it suffering? It's so easy in Zen practice to think that we're not supposed to be feeling all these things that we feel. Or that we're not supposed to still be feeling them. I've been practicing for 30 years. Things take time. They are deep. Some of our habits are deep and subtle. It's okay. Just my mind. Where's the problem? So Bodhidharma again. The sutras say, when you meet with adversity, don't be upset, because it makes sense. With such understanding, you are in accord with principle, and by encountering suffering as an opportunity, you enter the way. So in this retreat that I did with Rebecca Lee, one of the teachings that she offered over and over again during the week was about not opposing. She said quite a bit, when thoughts arise, no problem. If thoughts arise, no problem. At the beginning of the week, I was sort of like, wait a minute. I got to do something. No problem. Don't oppose anything. Allowing thoughts and feelings to arise, she says, so that they can be heard and felt. They want to be heard and felt. You want to be heard and felt. To hear and feel yourself. Very gentle. Allow yourself to feel what you're feeling. Get close to it. Not a problem. Don't oppose it. You can get close to it. Be intimate with it. So that you can become very familiar. Familiar with your habits. Not a problem. When we're opposing, when we're trying to get rid of, cutting off, we're opposing ourselves. Trying to get rid of a part of ourselves. So don't oppose anything, she says. Be gentle, I say. That discomfort, not a problem. Feel it, allow it, listen to it. There is an opportunity. In opposing, we're creating. What is there to oppose? Allow and accept. Don't oppose anything. This practice, realization, Don't oppose anything. Then we are in accord with principle. So may these teachings that come down to us from our founder, may they help us to enter the way. There is so much suffering that needs our attention, needs our care. May we take care.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.